Lord Brocklehurst is desperately trying to converse with Tweenie.
Now, tell me, have you been to the opera? What sort of weather have you been having in the kitchen? For heaven's sake, woman, be articulate.
No, my lady. His lordship may compel us to be equal upstairs, but there will never be equality in the servants' hall.
What's that?
No equality?
Can't you see, Crichton, that our divisions into classes are artificial, that if we were to return to nature, which is the aspiration of my life, all would be equal?
If I may make so bold as to contradict your lordship?
Go on.
The divisions into classes, my lord, are not artificial. They are the natural outcome of a civilized society. There must always be a master and servants in all civilized communities, for it is natural, and whatever is natural is right.
It is very unnatural for me to stand here and allow you to talk such nonsense.
Yes, my lord, it is. That is what I have been striving to point out to your lordship.
What's the matter with Fisher? She's looking daggers.
The tedious creature. Some question of etiquette, I suppose.
Catherine sails across to Fisher.
How are you, Fisher?
I am nothing, m'lady. I am nothing at all.
Oh dear, who says so?
His lordship has asked that kitchen wench to have a second cup of tea.
But why not?
If it pleases his lordship to offer it to her before offering it to me.
So that's it. Do you want another cup of tea, Fisher?
No, m'lady, but my position. I should have been asked first.
Oh dear.
All this has taken some time, and by now the feeble appetites of the uncomfortable guests have been satiated. But they know there is still another ordeal to face, his lordship's monthly speech. Everyone awaits it with misgiving. The servants, lest they should applaud, as last time, in the wrong place, and the daughters, because he may be personal about them, as the time before. Ernest is annoyed that there should be this speech at all when there is such a much better one coming, and Brocklehurst foresees the degradation of the peerage. All are thinking of themselves alone, save Crichton, who knows his master's weakness and fears he may stick in the middle. Lord Loam, however, advances cheerfully to his doom. He sees Ernest's stool and artfully stands on it to his nephew's natural indignation. The three ladies knit their lips, the servants look down their noses, and the address begins.
My friends, I am glad to see you all looking so happy. It used to be predicted by the scoffer that these meetings would prove distasteful to you. Are they distasteful? I hear you laughing at the question.
He has not heard them, but he hears them now, the watchful Crichton giving them a lead.
No harm in saying that among us today is one who was formerly hostile to the movement, but who today has been won over. I refer to Lord Brocklehurst, who, I am sure, will presently say to me that if the charming lady now by his side has derived as much pleasure from his company as he has derived from hers, he will be more than satisfied.
All look at Tweenie, who trembles.
For the time being, the artificial and unnatural, I say unnatural.
Loam glares at Crichton, who bows slightly.
Barriers of society are swept away. Would that they could be swept away forever.
The page boy cheers and has the one moment of prominence in his life. He grows up, marries, and has children, but is never really heard of again.
But that is entirely and utterly out of the question. And now, for a few months, we are to be separated. As you know, my daughters and Mr. Ernest and Mr. Treherne are to accompany me on my yacht, on a voyage to distant parts of the earth. In less than 48 hours, we shall be underway.
But for Crichton's eye, the reckless page boy would repeat his success.
Do not think our life on the yacht is to be one long, idle holiday. My views on the excessive luxury of the day are well known, and what I preach, I am resolved to practice. I have therefore decided that my daughters, instead of having one maid each as at present, shall on this voyage have but one maid between them.
Three maids rise, also three mistresses.
My lord!
My mind is made up.
I cordially agree.
And now, my friends, I should like to think that there is some piece of advice I might give you. Some thought. Some noble saying over which you might ponder in my absence. In this connection, I remember a proverb, which has had a great effect on my own life. I first heard it many years ago. I have never forgotten it. It constantly cheers and guides me. The proverb I speak of.
Lome grows pale and taps his forehead.
Oh dear, I believe he has forgotten it.
The proverb to which I refer.
Alas, it has gone. The distress is general. He has not even the sense to sit down. He gropes for the proverb in the air. They try applause, but it is no help.
I have it now.
Not he.
Crichton?
Crichton does not fail her. As quietly as if he were in galoshes, mind as well as feet, he dismisses the domestics. They go according to precedence as they entered, yet in a moment they are gone. Then he signs to Mr. Treherne, and they conduct Lord Loam with dignity from the room. His hands are still catching flies. He still mutters, "The proverb, that proverb." But he continues, owing to Crichton's skillful treatment, to look every inch a peer. The ladies have now an opportunity to air their indignation.
One maid among three grown women.
Mary, I think I had better go. That dreadful kitchen maid.
I can't blame you, George.
George salutes Mary.
Your father's views are shocking to me, and I am glad not to be one of the party on the yacht. My respect for myself, Mary, my natural anxieties to what Mother will say. I shall see you, darling, before you sail.
Lord Brocklehurst bows to the others and goes.
Selfish brute, only thinking of himself. What about my speech?
One maid among three of us. What's to be done?
You must do for yourselves, that's all.
Do for ourselves? How can we know where our things are kept?
Are you aware that dresses button up the back?
How are we to get into our shoes and be prepared for the carriage?
Who is to put us to bed? And who is to get us up? And how shall we ever know it's morning if there's no one to pull up the blinds?
Crichton enters.
How is his lordship now?
A little easier, sir.
Crichton, send Fisher to me.
Crichton goes.
I have no pity for you girls.
Ernest, go away and don't insult the broken-hearted.
And uncommon glad I am to go. Ta-ta, all of you. He asked me to say a few words. I came here to say a few words, and I'm not at all sure that I couldn't bring an action against him.
Ernest departs, feeling that he has left a dart behind him. The girls are alone with their tragic thoughts.